This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. It's March, so Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this year. There's just nothing like betting in March. Breakdowns of every region and every game. From conference tournaments to the Final Horn, we'll have the picks and the plays on every single game. Cinderella spotlights, upset alerts, and some of that value for the last team standing. It's tourney time, so hunker down and bet the board with us. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket in the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yelton, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast.
Welcome to Utopia.
Hey, everyone. Finally, we are live this week. The Utopia Football Podcast is here, recording on a Thursday with basketball going on in the background in my studio here, otherwise known as my living room. If you're watching on YouTube, I'm going to keep the TV screens off of the shot so that you're not distracted by, Creighton and Louisville going on in the background. My bracket's already getting killed. I'm losing this Louisville game, and High Point is beating Purdue. So let's talk some football, shall we? Some Texans football. I'm Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. weekdays. You can listen on the Odyssey app. You can watch us on YouTube and Twitch. We appreciate you for that. And, of course, this podcast you can watch on YouTube and get it wherever you get your podcasts. This is my pre-podcast reminder for you to subscribe. If you could, hit that subscribe button so you automatically get the downloads. We're heading into a very, very fun time of year with the draft coming up in late April, and this has been a crazy week and a half for the Houston Texans as we are just several hours removed from two big moves yesterday. I was all set to do the podcast on Wednesday, and then I had a speaking engagement, and I got delayed getting to record it yesterday afternoon. As I'm getting ready to record, the Cam Robinson signing comes down. I'm like, all right, so I got to wait now and just see what the kind of a fallout from this is, and get the details on it, and talk to some people. And then as I'm getting ready to pop one last night, Danielle Hunter gets signed to an extension. So I just threw my hands up and said, you know what? Let's do this bad boy on Thursday when I think things will have calmed down a little bit. I think Nick Caserio has hit his quota on making it rain on people this week, especially when you throw in the Derek Stingley Jr. extension, which I don't think we've had a chance to talk about here on the Utopia Football Podcast. If you've been listening to Payne and Pendergast, it's been a big topic really all week because Stingley just did his media session yesterday. So the news came down, I think, on Monday that Stingley had extended his contract 3 years, $30 million. And then he signed it on Tuesday, press conference Wednesday, and now we get to talk about the aftermath of that. So let's get into that. We're going to do a mailbag today as well. If you never sent an email before, or you want a reminder as to what the email address is that you want to send one, houmailbag@gmail.com, houmailbag@gmail.com. We'll dig into the mailbag a little bit later. But before we do that, I do want to give you my takes on the Derek Stingley Jr. contract extension, the signing of Cam Robinson, and then the extension for Danielle Hunter. So we'll start with Stingley, 3 years, $30 million bucks, gets tacked on to, I think this is important to know, it's getting tacked on to the end of his current rookie contract, which is this season, the fifth-year option, which would be 2026, and then the 3 years, $90 million, most of which, really all but a million of which, is guaranteed. No idea why Nick is doing these things where he's guaranteeing like 98% of the contract. I don't know why it's not just fully guaranteed. But whatever the case may be, Stingley's going to be a really rich guy. Those 3 years get tacked on in 27, 28, and 29. So the net effect of this contract is that it averages out to about $22 million a year over that five-year period, which is very reasonable for a cornerback of Stingley's caliber. I don't know how the salary cap is going to play out with this, other than it would appear that a lot of the money that he just signed for is going to be stuff that's coming down the road. and that the Stingley effect, if anything, there might even be a net positive effect on the cap this year, depending on how they structured it. But I think that's important to note, because we're going to be doing this same thing with Will Anderson Jr. next year. And keep in mind, the rate for that market is in the high 30s now, 30 and 40 million for Myles Garrett. And then obviously CJ Stroud, where that market is up in the $55 to $60 million range. If all goes as planned in 2025, we should be having these same conversations about both of those players next year. And I think between the Stingley contract, the Nico Collins contract from last year, where they signed Nico with a year left on his rookie deal, and I'll even throw in Danielle Hunter's extension that they gave him last night, just tacking a year onto it. Different kind of category of player age-wise, and he was a free agent they brought in, not a draft pick. But I think that the message is the same with all these from Nick Caserio, which is if you come in, you work hard, you play well, you're not a distraction, you're going to get paid. Like, the formula is pretty simple. I think we've seen that Nick Caserio is a fairly predictable GM, and I mean that in a good way, which is that he's got a code, and if you adhere to that code, you're going to get paid by Nick Caserio. I think Nick and D'Amico value the intel that they have on current players in the building way more than any other commodity other than being good at football. Of all the other things off the field, all the other things in the building, all the other things that would factor into signing a guy or extending a guy or giving him big money, the ability to be able to see them work every day. And I think that's very evident in the Nico contract last year and the Stingley contract this year and the Danielle Hunter contract this year. That they value that intel. And if they see that you're doing that, then you're going to make a whole hell of a lot of money. Derek Stingley Jr. and Danielle Hunter, who have both been made very, very wealthy in the last 72 hours, they were already pretty wealthy, but you know what I mean, are two of the most, if you talk to people, two of the most low-maintenance guys on the team. That's what they want. They don't want distractions. They want good football players who love football, who love to be in the building, who love getting after it, who see it as a year-round endeavor, not an August through January endeavor. And I think that's what those guys, I think that's what the trait is with those guys. As far as back to Stingley, because we'll get to the other contracts here in a second, but back to Stingley for a second. Totally deserved to be the highest paid cornerback in football. I think it's really interesting, the journey that Stingley has been on. And I guess suppose a cause for concern, because we have no guarantees that what we saw with Stingley in 2024 from a health standpoint, where he played in every game, nearly every snap of every game, he might have played every snap this season, that's going to be what the situation is moving forward. The two prior years to that, he missed big chunks of time with a hamstring injury. At LSU, he missed his last big chunks of his last two seasons there with injuries. In the last 6 years, Stingley has had two fully healthy seasons. And you could argue he's been the best cornerback on the planet in both of them in his levels of football that he was playing. He was a freshman All-American at LSU in 2019. Played every game that year, or virtually every game. He was healthy that season and played really well. The only other season since high school that he's played in full was last year, and he was the best cornerback on the planet. So it's a worthwhile risk. When he was asked about what he had changed or done differently to maintain health this season in his press conference yesterday, I was hoping for some sort of answer where he would talk about some revolutionary things he was doing or things they had identified that he could do differently. He really made it sound like it was his injury luck was just better this past year. So hopefully that's the case moving forward. Look, nobody takes better care of themselves or works harder or is at practice or in the building more than Derek Stingley Jr. So whatever he was suffering from injury-wise his first and second years in the NFL, I think that was just bad injury luck. But it is crazy to think, like, if you go back to week two of D'Amico's first year, 2023, you remember the Texans started 0-2. They lost to the Ravens in week one. They lost at home to Anthony Richardson / Gardner Minshew at home in week two. And after that week two game, it was reported that Derek Stingley Jr. had a hamstring injury. He went on to miss 2 months of football. When that hamstring injury came down for Stingley after week two, again, with the Texans 0-2 at the time, people wanted Nick Caserio fired because Kenyon Green had already been lost for the season. And even in his rookie year, he wasn't that good to begin with. And now you got Stingley, who had missed half the previous season, played two games in 2023, and then was going to be on track to miss another couple months with a hamstring. People were ready to fire Nick Caserio because those were his first two picks as a first two first round picks as a GM. The 2021 draft was what it was. He had nothing to work with there because Bill O'Brien had traded everything from that draft. Drafted Davis Mills with the 67th pick. That was the first swing at the bat that he got, Caserio. But when you had the combination of Kenyon Green, Derek Stingley Jr., look, John Mechie was a second-round pick for them that same season. That was a cancer situation, so that was unique. I don't think Nick was getting any smoke for that at the time. But particularly Stingley, it's really come back around for both guys, I would say. More so for Stingley because he's got $90 million in the bank that he's going to be getting here in the next 4 or 5 years. But I would say Nick Caserio's stock, I think, with the fan base has kind of steadied itself. A lot of that will be played out with how this offensive line situation works itself out, which is a good segue. So anyway, so closing the book on Stingley, I mean, that was 3 or 4 days ago. So closing the book on Stingley, happy for him, well-deserved. I think the next extension coming up will be Jalen Petrie. I think he's going to get some sort of extension from the Texans. He'll get offered one, I think, whether he takes it or not and decides to play it out in free agency, we'll see. But I think Petrie's another guy they want to keep around. Not at $30 million a year, obviously. I don't think even at $15 million a year for Petrie. But I think they view Petrie as one of the 10 or 12 guys that this team is going to be built around over the next 4 or 5 years, which is an eternity in the NFL. So let's get to Cam Robinson then, the Cam Robinson signing. 1 year, $12 million, up to $14.5 million his contract could be. Has played most of his career with the Jacksonville Jaguars, other than part of last season after he got traded to Minnesota. When Minnesota needed a tackle, they lost their left tackle, Christian Dursau. Cam Robinson, statistically and Pro Football Focus-wise and whatnot, not great last year. Not great protecting the passer. Oh, check it out. Look at the guys in the background here. If you're watching on YouTube, see the scaffolding right there? This is what's going on in my building right now. They have literally spent the last year and a half replacing those aren't window washers. They are replacing every single window in the high rise that I live in. Every single one. We've had construction workers and window guys walking around our building for the last year and a half, leaving dirt in the elevator and just walking around, stinking the place up. It's not their fault. They're in a very dirty and sweaty job, but I'll be glad when it's over. This is normal. These fuckers right here just dropping right by our window. I mean, it gets really hard to walk around naked in my apartment when I don't know if there's going to be a few construction workers coming down on a scaffold. But maybe that's the show that they want. Maybe they want me walking around naked. Maybe they've got a 50-plus-year-old bald man fetish, and they're just going to park themselves there. You know what? If they want to pay me, do it. I'm not afraid to do a live OnlyFans for a bunch of construction workers going behind me. It's tough times, man. Tough times in this business right now. You got to find supplemental forms of income. Got to find trickles of revenue. Back to Cam Robinson. So I like the signing. I know statistically he hasn't been great. Look, he's not an elite left tackle. Otherwise, he wouldn't be signing with the Texans for 1 year, $12 million. He'd be on somebody else's team. Jacksonville never would have traded him if he were an elite left tackle. What he is a veteran left tackle who has had some moments where he's done some things well. I'm assuming they've done the background check on the swarminess of him. This is the biggest thing that needs to get fixed with the offensive line is the dog in them. The desire to rip the hearts out of the defensive players in front of them. That has not existed with that offensive line forever. Probably since the Kubiak days, it hasn't existed with this offensive line. And certainly with Laremy Tunsil setting the tone the last few years, this is not an offensive line that has played vicious football, physical, gritty football. It's not to say Laremy Tunsil's a bad player. He's a good player, but he's a good player who I just think has a certain level of grittiness that is a very low level. Cam Robinson, I'm assuming they've done the recon on to at least see that he's willing to, you know, willing to get physical with people in the run game, things like that. I think it was really important. There clearly doesn't appear to be an appetite for this team to play Titus Howard at left tackle. Either right out of the chute when they drafted him. I mean, they traded for Laremy Tunsil 4 months after they drafted Titus Howard. He's shuttled back and forth from right tackle to left guard. This was the perfect opportunity. If you thought he had any left tackle in him, to play him at left tackle. And I'm not eliminating that possibility. But if I had to guess, if healthy, I think this offensive line has Cam Robinson at left tackle, Blake Fisher at right tackle, and Titus Howard at left guard. Left guard had been a big point of pain for this team coming into this offseason. And especially once they traded Laremy Tunsil, it looked like, okay, Titus ain't playing left guard. If the solution at left guard is Titus Howard, I'm fine with that. He was okay last year at left guard. I think he's going to be better coached this year with Cole Popovich and with Nick Caley. The Nick Caley part, I don't know that it could be worse than with Bobby Slowick last year. So, and then if I had to guess the other two positions, I'll go Jared Patterson at center and at right guard. I'll go with Laken Tomlinson, knowing full well that Juice Scruggs or Ed Ingram could both play there. Look, none of these names are great. The fact of the matter is Cam Robinson is an average to below average tackle, probably, hopefully average with better coaching and playing with better players around him. Because Minnesota didn't have a great offensive line last year either. There's a reason they were out there signing Will Fries and Ryan Kelly in free agency. But the fact of the matter is he might be their best offensive lineman right now, Cam Robinson. And that's where we're at. We're just trying to get to five average guys here doing their thing. You get five average guys that are well-coached, it will look light years better than what they were trotting out there last year with Laremy Tunsil doing one thing really well and the other four sucking ass. So thumbs up for me on the Cam Robinson signing for what it was. It's 1 year, $12 million. It's not a huge commitment. And I think from what we've seen, if it goes well, if all of a sudden in year 8 or 9 or whatever, I think it's year 9 he's going into, he's drafted in 2017, whatever. Look, if it goes well, they want to keep him around. I think we've seen Nick Caserio will keep guys around that he sees as worth keeping around. We also have to keep in mind there's still a draft to come. So this offensive line, even with signing Cam Robinson, is still far from a finished room. The starting five is going to be far from finished until we're well into training camp. But as far as the room and the bodies that are going to be in there, there's at least, in my mind, between the draft and free agency, there's at least four or five more bodies that are going to be thrown into that room. Not to mention if they, make trades or whatever the case may be. But I'm thumbs up on the Cam Robinson trade just because you got a veteran guy over there now. Right now you were positioned to have somebody play left tackle that has never played left tackle in the NFL before. Blake Fisher might have gotten in there for a few snaps at some point if Tunsil went out of a game or whatever. But I'm talking about starting and playing consistently 70 snaps a game, week in, week out. Titus Howard and Blake Fisher had not done that yet. That would have been a real tough putt to go from Laremy Tunsil to somebody who's never played left tackle consistently before. At least Cam Robinson's done that. So thumbs up on that. The last one, Danielle Hunter. The extending him is something that Seth and I have been clamoring for this entire offseason. I think it's interesting that he signed the extension for $35.6 million in new money. Now, to be clear, he got $35.6 in new money. About 12 of that is going to get tacked onto his salary this year, and then the remainder is what he's going to get paid in 2026, about another $23 million or so. But I thought it was interesting that in the defensive end market, you had Max Crosby reset the market in terms of average annual value at $35.5 million a couple of weeks ago. Just a few days later, Cleveland has to basically bribe Myles Garrett to stick around and be a Cleveland Brown by going from 35.5 as the top in the market to $40 million bucks. That's what a ratchet-ass, shitty franchise the Browns are. The same franchise that had to pay Deshaun Watson $230 million guaranteed because that was the only way they were going to get him there, to go $80 million above the previous high guarantee because they're such a shitty franchise. They had to do a sort of a miniature version of the same thing with Myles Garrett. What I like about the Danielle Hunter contract being $100,000 more than Max Crosby is that much like the Deshaun Watson contract, where every other team that had to sign a quarterback basically told the guys they were signing, like, we're not paying you more than the Browns are paying Deshaun. The market will get there someday, and it has. It took 3 years. But that's not the standard. That's the Browns being a shitty franchise. Similarly, it would appear that Danielle Hunter realized, like, all right, I'm not going to get $40.1 million from the Texans. Look, I don't know that Danielle Hunter is better than Myles Garrett anyway. So that's, in some ways you could say like, well, look, he shouldn't get 40 because Myles Garrett's a better player. But that's such a big jump. I just think it's humorous to me that Max Crosby was used as sort of the market standard to jump by 100,000 than Myles Garrett. Cleveland doing it again, giving somebody a bunch of money that they didn't have to because they've got to do it to keep him around. So I like the signing of Danielle Hunter. This keeps intact when you think about it. If you think about the guys who are viewed as core guys on this defense, right? Guys that are unnegotiated, just inarguably part of what the Texans want to accomplish in the next couple of years. They've now got Will Anderson under contract for at least three more seasons, and I think he's going to get an extension. They've got Danielle Hunter under contract now for two more seasons. Azeez Al-Shaair is under contract for two more seasons. And then in the secondary, boy, you just start rattling off the names, but the ones that we want to be around for a while, C.J. Gardner-Johnson, they picked up. He's under contract for two more seasons. Kamari Lassiter, three more. Kalen Bullock, three more. Jalen Petrie is the only one that I would categorize as being what I think the team views as a core guy on defense that's under contract for only one more season. The rest of them are under contract for at least two, and a lot of them three more. Oh, and Derek Stingley Jr., he's under contract for five more years in the secondary. So in the NFL these days, that's really good. If you've got a core that's going to be around for two more years, and then you make sure that the young guys in that core are around for much longer than that, and you draft well, like this is how it's done. You're never going to have 25 guys on the roster that are viewed as core crucial guys that are sticking around for 4 years. It's not like the 70s with the Steelers where you can name the entire two deep and they're together for 10 years with each other. It's not that way anymore. But I think defensively the Texans are positioned about as well as you can be to say that this is the group, you know, and this is a Super Bowl caliber defense. I think it was a Super Bowl caliber defense last year. Since then, they've only really added, you know, they added C.J. Gardner-Johnson. And the big variable, I think, is linebacker probably right now, an interior defensive line. They brought back Sheldon Rankins. That was a one-year deal. They brought back Mario Edwards. That was a two-year deal. If you want to throw him into the mix because he was pretty good last year, he's around for two more years. Danico Autry is only around for one more year. So linebacker is the big one. Henry Toa has got two more years left on his deal. So throw him in there if you want to. I don't think he's the caliber of player of those other seven or eight guys I was talking about. And then I have no idea what to make of Christian Harris. He's got 1 year left. I don't even know if he still lives in Houston. I don't even know if he plays football. I don't even know if he's real. He might be a sim, right? And that was a simulation, right? He might be a bot. He could be. So anyways, saying that Danielle Hunter is a good signing because he played really well last year is very redundant. We know that. I think what it symbolizes in terms of the foundation of this defense, and I think, too, along with Stingley, what it symbolizes in terms of how you go about getting paid for this football team. Nico Collins, Derek Stingley Jr., and Danielle Hunter have given you the blueprint. If you're a current Texan in the building, they've given you the blueprint as to what you need to do to get paid. Show up, play hard, work out, put in the work, don't be a distraction, and you will get paid. Especially if you're elite, you will get paid. That's why I think Will Anderson Jr. and C.J. Stroud, I think they're going to have contracts in play. I think Will Anderson Jr. is going to be a lot like Stingley, assuming health, and he has another big year this year. I think Will Anderson Jr. will be a contract that gets signed within a week of the after the start of the business year for the NFL, like Stingley. C.J. Stroud might be a little more complicated because he's a quarterback and there may be a little more negotiating going on. And I think C.J. will be the first contract that Nick ends up giving out that's more than 3 years, if I had to guess. I think C.J. will get a longer contract than all the other ones. Every other contract Nick's given out, other than rookie deals, you're obligated to make those 4 years due to the collective bargaining agreement. But in terms of free agents or extensions, Nick hasn't done one longer than 3 years. CJ will break that mold. Will might not. Will might get, 3 years, $120 million or something like that. And if the last couple big deals Nick's given out, it'll be 3 years, $120 million with $119.5 million guaranteed. So happy about the money that got spent this week. Nick made it rain, man. Nick, you hit your quota. Good job. You spent a ton of the McNair's money. Way to go. And you know who doesn't care that that money got spent? The McNair's. They're happy to spend it. They know. They know the deal. All right. Let's get a little mailbag action in here. Because I got to get to watching some college basketball. Let's start with Bobby. Okay, a reminder, HOUmailbag@gmail.com. Bobby, given the trajectory of the Texans over the last 5 years, do you think it's more difficult to build a successful playoff team or maintain success? Maintain, always maintain. I wouldn't even say maintained. I think it's easier to get from being a shitty team to a playoff team than it is to get from being a playoff team to being a Super Bowl team. The gap, the margin is smaller. The margin is obviously much larger from where the Texans were before DeMeco to where they've gotten to with DeMeco. That's a much bigger margin. But that's an easier one. You get a quarterback and a few players, you can bridge that gap. We've seen that happen a ton, and I think that's a big part. And a coach, obviously, too. You got to get some things right. The hard part is going from where the Texans are now to where they want to get to. That's much harder. Maintaining success is, I always hate the word maintaining because I think the goal is to win the Super Bowl. And when you get into a maintaining success mode, I think you know there's a tendency to level off. So I'm not answering your question directly. I just think the overall point that I would make is that the jump the Texans are looking to make now is a much harder one than the jump that they made with DeMeco and CJ 2 years ago. I feel strongly about that. Appreciate you checking in, Bobby. Justin from Kingwood. DeMeco heard it from Utopia first that Tunsil was, in fact, not a dog. So he shipped that ass out and got himself a dog. Bittersweet because we lost one of the only bright spots on our O-line, but love what C.J. Gardner-Johnson will bring to our defense. Okay, so that's the swap-out Justin's talking about. Not swap-out necessarily in the same position group, but you got rid of Tunsil, who was, if he was a dog, he was like a labradoodle. You bring in C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who is a rabid, like pit bull Rottweiler crossbreed. Justin says, I'm scratching my head about us turning the line group over, though, to this extent and adding Lakin Tomlinson, who's 33. What are your thoughts? Hopefully Casario uses his draft capital for a trade to upgrade the line, but I'm terrified we're going draft only. Now, Justin sent this email before the Cam Robinson signing. So I wonder if Justin would have even sent the email had the Cam Robinson signing happened. But I'll still answer the question, what are my thoughts on where we are in the offensive line? I am optimistic it's going to be better than last year, even without Tunsil. Even if they were to pause right now, and I still think they're going to draft somebody who they view as a starter, or at least competing for a starting job on the offensive line, I do. But let's pretend that this is the group, that they only start drafting guys in like the fifth round, so it's a bunch of projects. And by the way, there's still trades available. There's still guys on the street that could be signed. Did anybody expect them to sign Cam Robinson yesterday? I didn't. So let's pretend it's Cam Robinson, Titus Howard, Jarrett Patterson, Lakin Tomlinson, and Blake Fisher from left to right. I think that group has a good chance to be better than the one they put out there last year because the one they put out last year stunk. There's a reason why three out of the five that started week one are gone. They weren't good. So there's that. And look, being better than the 2024 Texans O-line should not be the goal, but it's really more of an assessment. So I think they're going to be fine. I think the vision of what they want this line to look like in totality moving forward, like they've got a defense now in place, as I just illustrated a few minutes ago. They've got a defense and a foundation there in place where you feel like this is how the defense is going to feel. May not be all the same faces every year, but between DeMeco and his coaching vibe, the zeitgeist of DeMeco Ryans, that's going to be how the Texans play defense. Some years it'll be a top three defense. Some years it'll be a top 10 or 12 defense. It's never going to be a bad defense as long as DeMeco and a few of the guys are there. For them to get to that same spot with the offensive line is not going to happen in 1 year. It's probably going to take a couple of years to do. But if they get a couple draft picks right and they make some moves in free agency, you know, maybe their big move they make in the next couple of years is to bring in an offensive lineman. Who knows? But I feel good about the direction of it. Do I feel good about the state of it right now? Not great. Not great. Not five alarm fire or anything like that. Because, again, I think even with this group, they're going to be better. Because I think the coaching can't be much worse, both in terms of the position coach and the OC. So I'm okay. I'm all right. I know a lot of people have trust issues with Nick Caserio because he's the one that largely built the offensive line that was so bad last year. And I get that. That's understandable. I think Nick's a smart football guy. That's the thing. I don't think Nick is a guy. I think Nick is a guy to me that's going to see what the decisions he made, what went wrong with them. Let's not replicate them. And I think the big thing is he's going to involve D'Amico Ryans heavily in the evaluation process to sniff out the level of dog in the players they bring in. So I feel okay about that. John's in Tampa. Thank you, Justin, for the email. John in Tampa. I apologize if you've addressed this. I live in Tampa. Between listening to Payne and Pendergast and work, I don't always get time to listen to the mailbag. My question is, do you think Damian Pierce can get back to running like his rookie year with a new OC? And hopefully, ooh, hang on one second, people. My computer's about to run out of juice, so I want to make sure I get this plugged in. So this is the benefit of doing a podcast, not a live radio. Although on live radio, this would be highly entertaining. There we go. We're back. Okay. John in Tampa was asking me about Damian Pierce. Can he get back to what he looked like his rookie year with a new OC and a better line? I think if they can get him back to running like a rookie, could be a big plus with him and Mixon. Thanks for all you do. I love listening to P&P as well as your podcast. Thank you, John. I appreciate that very much. I don't know. Sorry, John, you asked such a good question, and you were so kind at the end talking about how much you love me and the podcast and me and Seth. I have no idea what Nick Caley intends to run as far as the running game. Does he run a system that is a little more Pierce-friendly? If Nick Caley's going to come in and run some sort of variation of what's been run, just a more efficient and better coached version of it, then I'm not all that confident that Damian Pierce turns into something that's worth keeping around after this year. Pierce himself is heading into a contract year. That went by fast. I think it's possible he gets back to running like his rookie year. But I think it's been made very clear, and I'm completely discounting the big game he had against the Titans in Week 18 last year. That game doesn't really count to me. There's a certain style of running that Damian Pierce is really good at. I'd like them to get a back to play behind Mixon that can really threaten you as a receiving threat out of the backfield. I'm not talking about Daria Gumbawale. I think running back is a very underrated need for this team. I'm kind of glad they didn't go dipping into the veteran running back pool, because that would signal to me that they're going to use a pick on a running back. And this is a really deep running back class. If you talk to people who are smart about this stuff, John Harris is my go-to on most of this stuff. We'll get Johnny on the podcast at some point here. But I'm not super confident in Damian Pierce, but man, I'm rooting for Damian Pierce. I really love Damian Pierce, the person. So I'm rooting for him. They ran Mixon into the ground last year. You know, if there was anything there with Damian, they would have been using him last year, I would think. All right, Tanish is back from UT. Tanish, he is back from UT Austin. Super busy with midterms this week. Oh, good luck with midterms. Well, they're probably over now, but good luck. Hope it went well. I can always make time for some Utopia, he says. Tune out having you and Seth in the background instead of music helps me study better. Okay, so you study better with me and Seth in the background? I find that hard to believe. Just because we're such a couple of idiots that I would have to listen to what it is we're saying, because sometimes it's so stupid. Hopefully we're making you smarter. You know what? You know how I look at that, Tanish? And I'm okay with this. If you have two really stupid people talking in the background, it gives you more confidence that you're smart and you're going to do better on your midterms. That's my hot take. Your question. With the addition of Gardner Johnson and the return of Mario Edwards and Sheldon Rankins, it seems like our defensive starters are almost set for 2025. Should we be primarily attacking offense for the rest of free agency in the early rounds of the draft? I think there's certain things you need to come away with in those first four picks. They've got four picks in the top 89. Now, with Caserio, he could trade back before this podcast is over. You never know with Nick when it's coming down. And if they traded out of 25 and traded back and picked up a few more picks, that sure would make day two a lot of fun. They've already got three picks on day two, and they've done generally pretty well picking on day two. So I wouldn't hate that if they did that, as long as it's a good deal. I think there's very specific things they're going to be attacking in day one and early day two. With those four picks, if we came away with a wide receiver, an offensive lineman, a running back, and then I'll leave the other one open for whatever best defensive player available is, and not necessarily in that order, although I wouldn't go running back in the first round or anything like that, because where they're picking in the first round, it's kind of a soft spot for running backs. It seems like the top two, the Hampton kid out of North Carolina and then Ashton Gentry, seem to be top. So they seem to be going before the Texans are picking. So I would say with the first two picks, if they go some combination of wide receiver, O-lineman, and then the next two picks, some combination of best defensive player available and a running back, that's how I would want to attack it. They do need a wide receiver. My main thing, if you could give me one thing I want to come away with this draft with, one player, where they're at right now, reasonable. You know what I mean? Like, I could say Tyler Warren, but he ain't dropping to 25. So if they stay where they are right now, Matthew Golden from Texas would be the one that I would want. I would draft him. I think he's a playmaker. I think he's a difference maker. And then I would use day two to address the offensive line. I think you can still get capable offensive linemen who are coachable and can play at the next level in rounds two and three. Ryan from the Shug. Hope all is well. Happy free agency. Glad Nick Caserio is keeping you guys busy. He is. He is keeping us busy. And on occasion, when he makes a move, he will text me and say, "Have a good show tomorrow, buddy." And I'm not joking. He will text me, "Have a good show." Just providing content for my favorite show. So we appreciate that. Heard y'all on PMP seeking nicknames for the defense, NRG Stadium. How about this? Sting Legion or Swarm Surge for the defense? Sting Legion. I guess that's a safe one because he's going to be around for the next 5 years. It's tough when you do it. It's a player-based name because what if that player gets sent out? But Sting Legion is good. Swarm Surge, not bad. The one we really liked on our show was the Kill Zone. Very violent, but we're okay with that. I mean, we're the same show that nicknamed Reed Shepard Cracker McBuckets. So we ain't afraid of some controversial nicknames on Payne and Pendergast. I saw one floating around on the internet today. Border Patrol. That's edgy. Ryan suggests the Slammer or the Breaker Box for the stadium as a whole. Okay. So yeah, for the defense, Swarm Surge or Sting Legion. Yeah, we're talking Kill Zone would be more for NRG Stadium. Slammer or the Breaker Box. I can already hear Vandy saying, "It's a Swarm Surge. The tide is rising." Let me know what you think. I think those are good, Ryan. I think those are good. We'll throw them on the big Google Doc of potential nicknames. Appreciate the creativity, man. Email coming in from Birch, longtime listener from back when you were with the Triple Threat. Well, thank you. Listen to Payne and Pendergast every morning since moving to the Northeast, New York City for 10 years, Central Mass for the past, Central Mass. Ooh, Springfield or Worcester, Birch? What is the farthest the team has reached in the playoffs in the first year of having a new OC? Would it be crazy for us to be optimistic about getting out of the divisional round in year one? I don't think it's crazy to be optimistic because I don't think it's all on Nick Caley to get them to the divisional round. I do. I mean, I think the offense needs to play better, but I think it's on a lot of people. So I don't pinpoint that as a Nick Caley thing necessarily. As far as the answer to your question, I guarantee you that there's probably been a couple Super Bowl teams who have operated with a first-year offensive coordinator. Now, have they been offensive coordinators who never called plays before, like Nick Caley? I don't know exactly what your definition of new is in this question, Birch. I'm just not that worried about it. I'm not. If he's good, he's good. If he's not, he's not. If I had to guess, I would say that there's been plenty of teams that have made deep playoff runs with first-year offensive coordinators. Keep in mind, typically a first-year offensive coordinator is brought in to fix something that was really, really bad. So you're working off of a basis oftentimes where anything's going to be an improvement. I expect this offense to be better almost by accident because they, for the talent level they had, were so bad at times last year. Not scoring in the second half of like six games in a row is freaking inexcusable. Birch also says, off topic, I grew up and spent my 20s in Houston's and Lizards was our go-to spot. Maybe one of these days I'll stop by and run into you when I'm back in Hustletown. I'll be there, man. I'm there at least 3 or 4 days a week. That's where I do my show prep oftentimes. It's gotten a little harder because Lizards is popular and you got people in your ear talking. And if they see you there, they want to, especially because the TV's on ESPN. So they want to talk about things, which I don't mind. Like when people stop coming up to you in this business and talking to you, that's the bad time. It's just gotten harder to get my work done there. But I just kind of weigh the pros and cons. I'm like, let's see, cons, I can't get my work done. Pros, I can get pretty drunk. And oftentimes I'll side with alcohol. I found out about the Tunsil trade at Lizard. That was actually kind of fun. I was there and there were some Texan fans hanging out on the front porch. So that was kind of cool. Almost like a mini talk show. You know, we were chopping it up about the Tunsil trade. So cool, man. I'll be at the Zards probably. I do 80% of my bar hopping. I wind up at Lizards. Coach Mike, Sean, I would love to hear your early thoughts on the significant changes you're expecting to see in the Texans offensive scheme. Towards the end of the season, I was wondering if the line coach and OC had stopped talking. That's pretty funny. I said this earlier in the pod. We don't know yet, you know, and I'm trying to figure out what the tells are from what they've done so far. I think that Christian Kirk is a true slot receiver is a tell as to how the importance of that position. They've signed a fullback, and I'm not talking about some hybrid who doubles, who moonlights as a tight end and is also a fullback. This Jacob Johnson appears to be a true head-cracking, skull-cracking fullback. So I think they're going to want to run the football. I mean, their desire to be able to run the football is as much a D'Amico thing as it is a Nick Cayley thing. So they haven't made any pickups at tight end that I can think of. So what do we think about that? Nick Cayley, a former tight ends coach, is he cool with this room? I do think tight end is a below the radar potential draft option. You know, if the Loveland kid from Michigan slips to 25, I could see that being a pick. So, yeah, Coach Mike, I don't have a ton of answers for you. I mean, we're all just basically going off of what moves they've made personnel-wise. So, I'll tell you what I am expecting to see. In terms of the scheme and whether he's using a lot of, you know, using a lot of two tight end personnel or three wide receivers, or does he go with a traditional I formation a lot? I don't know. My guess is he's going to mix in a lot of those things. He spent time in New England. He spent time, Cayley has, with Sean McVay and the Rams. He's also a smart, astute, observant guy who's watched other offenses. My guess is he's had an idea as to what a Nick Cayley offense would look like for a long, long time now. I would say the one thing I think we will see is a cleaner, more fundamentally sound brand of football. He seems like a coach that's more fundamentally oriented than Bobby Slowick, who seems more scheme oriented. So I think we're going to see fewer penalties. I think we're going to see a smarter football team, especially along the offensive line. So there you go. Joe Q is in. Now that Chase and Higgins deals are done, let's unpack your tweet about the Bengals. And I don't remember exactly what I tweeted. I think I tweeted, if I had to guess, I tweeted something about how they're going to be the greatest 8-9, the most exciting 8-9 team of all time. In terms of average annual value, the Bengals have about $125 million per year in QB and their top two wide receivers. For the Texans, QB plus Nico and Kirk, the comparable number right now is about $50 million, yet the Texans supposedly are tight on cap room. So does it follow then that the Texans have gold-plated luxury handmade furniture in all other position groups? Besides QB and tight end, or at least did before Tunsil. In other words, does the portfolio of Tunsil, Titus, Mixon, Dalton Schultz, Danielle Hunter, Al Shire, Jimmy Ward, Kemi Fairbairn, and Tommy Townsend qualify as gratuitous excess spending at non-QB, non-wide receiver positions for follow-up now that we know that Sting will cost $30 million per year and Stroud and will likely add $110 million? Are we destined to necessarily have a lot more of the two deep on rookie contracts in 2027 than we do in 2025? Okay, we got to the question. I'm glad you bolded that question too, Joe Q, because I wasn't entirely sure where you were going with this. But I do. And that's one of the I do expect them to have more guys on rookie deals and have cheaper guys. It's just math. Unless you really want to get crazy like the Eagles have and putting stuff. See, they're back doing this rope thing again. I hate these fuckers, man. Yeah, that's a banging on my window from a rope from these assholes replacing the windows. So I would say almost the math is going to force them to have guys on rookie deals. And I'm okay with that. I think by and large, compared to the rest of the NFL, I think D'Amico and Nick have done a pretty good job at evaluating rookies. Not across the board, but I think a pretty good job. So I think that's why I wouldn't mind seeing them trade back off at 25 and pick up a couple extra picks. is that I do think they're going to need some cheap labor on this roster over the next couple years. Now, as we saw with the way Stingley's contract is structured, and as you point out, Joe Q, starting in, he's going to cost $30 million per year, actually starting in 2027 because of his fifth year option. But yeah, I think that's the ticket. And I think too, this is why winning at a high level is good, is that you become a place where veteran guys looking to ring chase come to your team, and you may be able to get them a little bit cheaper. So I think getting stockpiling draft picks unlocks a lot of avenues to make sure you can keep your gold-plated players, as you like to call it, Joe Q, gold-plated luxury handmade furniture. But I also think winning is a cheat code to that as well. The guys want to come to Houston. I do think guys want to play for D'Amico. I do think guys like living in Houston. I think they like the nightlife in Houston, which maybe isn't as crazy as Vegas, New York, or L.A., but it's at that perfect level of stuff to do and craziness. You know, plenty of strip clubs and whatnot that it keeps them happy, you know? As far as the rising cap alleviating the need for tough decisions, as it seems to have in Cincinnati, Joe Q brings that up as well. It's always interesting. It's not like they're giving the Texans $20 million in extra cap space and nobody else. I think the extra cap space allows you maybe to erase a mistake or two that you have. But in terms of getting into bidding wars on good players or trying to retain guys and keep them from hitting free agency, that extra cap space is a weapon that every team has. You know what I mean? So it's almost like it's one thing if they hand you a bazooka and everybody else still has a pop gun. But if they hand everybody a bazooka, then it's still a fight, you know? So I think the extra cap space every year is a little overrated in terms of being able to say that, oh, this is going to give us an extra swing at the plate to build our roster. Like, no, it does give you a little wiggle room to maybe accept some dead money on deals that you did that went bad. But it's not something that makes you puts you in any better position to compete financially with the other teams in the league, in my opinion, if that makes sense. Always appreciate you, Joe Q. You're the man. Dennis from Budapest. Love Dennis checking in. Love Budapest checking in. Happy for Stingley, along with Will. He's my favorite Texan, and Nico, and CJ, and then smiley face emoji. I was pumped last year when Nico got paid. I was especially glad it didn't blow the roof off the ceiling of the wide receiver market. Though I don't complain, I'm a bit surprised by the Stingley numbers. Injury history being similar to Nico's. For some reason, I anticipated him, CJ, and Will taking a Nico-like slight home discount to allow for a deeper roster in general. Am I naive or is there something to it? I have a hunch you'll say I trust Nick and the ever-rolling future cap. We just got done talking about the future cap. You know me, I feel that's a little bit overrated in terms of being able to use that as a weapon to compete, you know, every team's got that available to them. First of all, I would say the Stingley, if you dig into the Stingley contract, it's not as onerous as it looks in the Adam Schefter tweet when it reports it. It doesn't kick in at $30 million this year or even next year. You average it out over the 5 years that Stingley's now signed up for to be a Texan. It averages $22 million a year. Pretty reasonable for a guy with Stingley's skills. And I understand the injury history as well. But, you know, look, at some point you got to take a chance. Will and CJ, do they take a hometown discount? I would guess, I'm just going to guess no, because most guys don't. But maybe they do. They both love playing here. I could see CJ being the type of quarterback that he needs to get paid. He needs something that's a respectable market level contract. But it doesn't need to kill everything moving forward. I'm fine on what their financial future is. Some of these contracts look bigger than ones that I thought they could swallow. Them adding $35 million onto Daniil is wild to me. Even signing Cam Robinson, like it feels like they've been operating all offseason with like $10 million in cap space. Now they keep opening up cap space by restructuring guys. I don't think Nick is doing any of this by the seat of his pants. None of it. I think he's a planner. He's already said on our show he looks at everything in two-year windows. So I'm fine with their financial future. I just want to make sure they're spending it on the right guys. I'm confident that whatever it is they want to do, like there's no scenario where they're going to look up with any of their core players available and not find the space to do that deal. That's the big thing. And then do you have the dry powder to go get a guy or two every year in free agency that can help you positively impact things? But I'm cool with where they are and where they're going. All right, a few more. Chris in the ATL. I know this may change by the time your next mailbag episode, but as of now, you have to answer the questions below based on these two off-season sign and succession plan options. Option one, overpay to sign Brandon Scherff and draft a guard with the first-round pick. Option two, overpay to sign Stephon Diggs and draft a wide receiver with the first-round pick. Scherff and Diggs are both still out there. Diggs is visiting the Patriots. I don't think he's going to be a Texan again. I don't think Scherff is going to be a Texan, but we're playing fun hypotheticals, so I am always willing to play along. Which of those moves is the best move for the Texans longer term? I would say longer term, the better of those two moves is probably Scherff and draft a guard, only because Scherff plays a position that ages pretty well. So if he's good, you're going to have that there available to you for a while. And then you draft a guard, which is, as we've seen, there's always a need. Diggs is the big question mark because he's approaching that age, ACL or no ACL, where receivers start to fall off. So I think Scherff is the better move long term. I think Diggs would be having Diggs back just for one season and then drafting a wide receiver. That's good. That's fun. Now we're back. Can you imagine? It's Nico, Kirk, Diggs, and a rookie wide receiver. There's a lot of you cringing right now because that was the same mentality last year going into the year, which I think was the right move to make, the Diggs trade. I had no issue with the Diggs trade now or even the way it turned out. He took a swing. Didn't work. But throwing everything at the skill positions, probably a little cringy for everybody. The one that excites me more is Diggs and draft a wide receiver. Chris, I'm a basic man. The closer you are to the ball, the more you handle the ball, the more it excites me. And now I feel like that last sentence is going to get me in trouble on the internet. Closer you are to the ball, the more it excites me. What did the man who had a testicle removed say? The closer you are to the ball, the more it excites me. All right. France in the North is back. I think it's fair to say Danielle Hunter has been fantastic for the Texans. If you're in Nick's shoes, would you be looking to sign him to an extension now or have him play out the rest of the season with a chance that he walks? France in the North sent this email before Danielle Hunter signed. I've always wanted Danielle to get an extension. I'm totally cool with it. When Myles Garrett signed, I'll be honest with you, I thought the chances of Danielle signing an extension were severely diminished. I'll just put it that way. I'm glad he's going to be around for two more years. Next question. In France in the North, we'll see if this one's already been answered since you sent this email. Part of this is on me, guys. You guys send these emails, and then I end up doing the show on a Thursday. So that's my bad. With Christian Kirk having some injury issues the last couple of seasons and us not having a true shotgun wide receiver after Nico, I'm not sure what you mean by shotgun wide receiver. Would you prefer to find secondary help via what's left in free agency or finding some through the draft? I don't think they need major secondary help right now. I would be okay with them drafting a cornerback. They brought in Ronald Darby to be a third corner. I think that's a solid veteran third corner. I'm all about throwing resources at the offense right now, especially wide receiver. That is a shaky room right now. After Nico and Christian Kirk, it's John Mechie, and I just don't really trust John Mechie as your wide receiver three. They need more wideout help. With Tunsil gone, who do you think will replace him as a captain? I think Jalen Petrie becomes a captain again next year. I think that's what happens. I think there's a lot of people in the building that were kind of sad that Jalen Petrie didn't get voted a captain this year. They really like his leadership in that building. So if I had to guess, and keep in mind, Tunsil's gone. Diggs is gone as well. He was a captain last year. I think the rest of the guys who were captains are all still here. Aziz, CJ, Nico. No, Nico wasn't a captain. I'm thinking Mixon was made a captain during the year. Will Anderson Jr. Jimmy Ward has been a captain. They're all still here. So if I had to guess, I would say Petrie, maybe. But I could see, Danielle Hunter, the big, strong, silent type. Good question. All right, last one is BK. Dear Sean, keeper of the Seth, leader of Utopia, wrestling fan. I have the following statements for Houston sports fans. You can say they are for real or fugazi. Insert John McClane saying fugazi here, BK says. Fugazi. Yeah, John and I used to play a little segment when he was the co-host of this podcast called For Real or Fugazi. It was pretty fun. I had lunch with John last week, by the way. He's doing well. He sends his regards to all of you listening to the Utopia Football Podcast. All right, for real or for Yazy, no one on the Texans is guaranteed a starting spot on the offensive line. I'm going to say Fugazi. I think Titus Howard is guaranteed a starting spot. It's just the question of what spot it's going to be. I think beyond that, Cam Robinson's about as close to being guaranteed, but he's new to the building, so I'm not going to guarantee anything. His salary would indicate he's going to start. You know what? I'll throw him in there too. Fugazi, Titus Howard, and Cam Robinson are both going to start. For real or Fugazi, the Texans are drafting O-line with one of their first two picks. That's for real. I do believe they're not done yet on the offensive line. They're going to draft an offensive lineman. And I would say signing Cam Robinson makes guard the betting favorite. Whereas before Cam Robinson, I think guard and tackle were both in play. I don't think it's going to be a center. They've got some center options on the roster already. For real or Fugazi, the Rockets will win a playoff series. I'm going to say for real because I'm hopeful of that. My hope with the Rockets this postseason, and this might be the last season I feel this way. Maybe next season it'll be title or bust or getting to the finals or bust. I feel like if the Rockets win a playoff series and then put up a serious fight in the second round, like go to seven games or go to six games with a, you know, kind of a blue blood team, I'll be happy with that. But I'll say for real, they win a playoff series. And it's going to be fun. They're probably going to play like the Lakers or the Warriors or the Grizzlies. That'll be a whole lot of fun. It's been 2020 since we've had playoff basketball. The month of May was always like carved out for basketball. And I think even in 2020, we didn't get playoff basketball till like July or August because of the COVID bubble. So this will be the first time since 2019 that we've had May playoff basketball. All right, for real or Fugazi, Jose Altuve can do whatever he wants in left field. He's the greatest Astro of all time. Fugazi, he can't do whatever he wants in left field. He has to at least catch the fucking ball, okay? I know that, BK, you sent this email before, at least before last night's drop, and I'm guessing before the one two nights ago, maybe. He is the greatest Astro of all time. That's for real. But he can't do whatever he wants in left field. He's got a hit. I don't care how great he is. If his OPS slips into like the mid to low 700s, that's going to be a disastrous contract to carry on the books. If Jose Altuve, he's never going to be good at defense ever again. I don't know that he's ever great to begin with, but he's never going to be good. There's a reason they're moving off his second base, and I don't think he's ever going to be a good left fielder. If he reaches a point in like at age 36 where he stops hitting, that's a contract that becomes worse than the Jose Abreu contract. Because you got four more years on that bad boy. And I know the last 2 years are lower price. I think that he's only making $10 million a year the last 2 years. But the totality of the contract's like $125, $130 million. For real or Fugazi, Luis Garcia wins more games this year than Justin Verlander. Fugazi, Luis Garcia, reported this morning, elbow soreness. I don't think he wins more games than me this year, Luis Garcia. Now, to answer a Sean question from last week, BK says, yes, Sylvester Turner is responsible for getting Deshaun Watson out of town and the Cleveland trade. The reason is simple. In 2019, Turner beat Tony Busby to get reelected. Oh, Tony, clearly with more time on his hands, filed the 25-victim lawsuits against Watson. If Busby wins that election, different story. So Mayor Turner gets the credit. BK, I'm using that on the show tomorrow. I'm leaving this open to remind myself to bring up that amazing point to Seth C. Payne and see what he thinks. That is tremendous. What a great way to end the mailbag. All right. I went way longer. Holy crap. We've been doing this for almost an hour. I got to watch basketball. What are you guys doing to me? Creighton's beating up on Louisville. My bracket's getting smoked there. Purdue. Okay. I can do this on my time. Sorry, guys. Let the rope banging continue outside. All right. HOUmailbag@gmail.com. Subscribe, rate, and review to the podcast. Got one more episode of Payne and Pendergast tomorrow this week, Friday. It's going to be a whole lot of fun. So join me at 6 a.m. on Sports Radio 610 or the Odyssey app. I'll be back next week. Mailbag, two-episode week next week. This is a one-episode week this week, two-episode week next week. Mailbag and otherwise we will get to, maybe even get a guest for next week. In the meantime, enjoy your weekend. Enjoy all the basketball. Appreciate you tuning in. Tell a friend. Have a good day, everybody.